You're listening to the show from KJZZ with help from our friends at The World and The Takeaway. I'm Steve Goldstein. It's Thursday, December 24th. You may have seen a lot of pop-up lots around town advertising local Christmas trees, but many of these evergreens actually come from the Pacific Northwest. KJZZ's Jimmy Jenkins set out to find a real Arizona Christmas tree.
When it comes to the holiday season, I usually feel a little like Charlie Brown.
I just don't understand it. Instead of feeling happy, I feel sort of let down.
But this year, I'm trying to get more into the spirit. I decided to get a Christmas tree, but I don't want a plastic tree from the store or an imported tree from a parking lot. The National Forest Service actually sets aside a number of trees each year for people to cut, but this seemed counterintuitive, so I called a horticulturist at Boyce Thompson Arboretum. Kim Stone says the practice is actually part of a fire suppression effort to thin out smaller trees.
I think many people might feel guilty about going out and cutting a tree, but if you think about it, an acre that's being treated can have hundreds, if not a thousand, small trees taken from each acre. So when you go out and cut your one little tree, you're really hardly making a dent, and you're certainly not doing anything negative.
After resolving my guilt, Stone did have one warning. Don't expect the bushy, full trees you see at the store. Those have actually been sheared to produce the robust, healthy look that we all covet.
So that's the first maybe disappointment people will find when they go out in the wild. It's the kind of tree that you're going to bring home and it's going to look kind of funky, but you're going to say, hey man, I cut this myself.
Knowing what to look for, I got in my car and headed for higher ground. Driving north on Highway 87 out of Phoenix, the elevation starts to change right at the entrance to the Tonto National Forest. You can see the mountains rising in the distance, and this morning they're shrouded with clouds.
Hi there.
Hi.
How are you today?
After a beautiful hour and a half drive, I arrived at the Payson Ranger Station.
Thank you so much.
Angie Rodriguez with the Forest Service sold me a $15 permit and showed me where to go.
We have your tag right here for any species up to 10 feet tall. You are free to cut your tree down in any of the harvest area, which is the shaded gray on both sides of this map. So any tree that looks like it's going to make a good Christmas tree for you would be fine.
Permit in hand, I drove north for several miles until I saw a promising sight on the side of the road. Two muddy, smiling boys coming out of the forest with pine trees hoisted over their heads.
So what do you got here?
A Christmas tree, an 8-footer.
Ethan Thurman beams with pride looking at the tree. His dad, Ryan, says it's a new holiday tradition for their family.
You know, the drive up together, we watched a Christmas movie in the car on the way up, and then spending an hour and a half hunting and cutting down your tree, and then we're going to go have lunch together. And then it's a real special day just to be together as a family. And again, that sense of using your hands and, you know, having to spy it out, it's a lot more exciting than just going to a Christmas tree shop and getting a tree.
After getting some pointers from Ethan, I wandered the forest for about an hour until finally I came into a bit of a clearing and the sun is shining on what appears to be about a 5-foot tall pine tree. There's even holly growing around the base of it. That's got to be a sign. I cleared some old growth out of the way with a hatchet so I could get at the trunk with my saw. Now that I've got it down, I'm just going to trim off some branches and make sure I can fit it in my car for the trip back to Phoenix. It's not very big, and the branches are kind of sparse, but with a little tinsel and ribbon, it'll suit my one-bedroom apartment just fine. I think Linus would approve.
I never thought it was such a bad little tree.
It's not bad at all, really. It just needed a little love. Jimmy Jenkins, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
Good afternoon, I'm Steve Goldstein. You're listening to the show with help today from our partners at The World. It was among the first in Arizona and served to connect our state to other parts of the country. Today, sections of it still exist. The show's Nadine Arroyo-Rodriguez takes us to one small section in the valley.
On Tempe's 8th Street, between McClintock and Rural, is a neighborhood with apartment complex, restaurant, coffee shop, and other businesses. But this one-mile stretch of community street was actually a highway. Did you know 8th Street was part of the Bankhead Highway?
Really, it was at one point the Ocean Highway. Conceivably, you could travel from Atlantic to Pacific.
Tempe preservationist John Southard and I strolled down on 8th Street looking for remnants of that roadway.
Well, this was certainly an early alignment of the highway that later became 60, 70, 80, in a sense, through Tempe.
The Bankhead Highway was a cross-country automobile route that started in the early 1900s. It connected 14 states from Washington, D.C. to San Diego. By around 1920, the highway crossed through Arizona. It started in Douglas, through Tucson, north to Florence and Apache Junction, then west through Mesa, Tempe, and Phoenix, continued to Buckeye, south to Yuma, and into California.
The Bankhead Highway would be marked by posts that were painted black and yellow and had BH written on them, so that as you're passing through an unfamiliar community, you could ensure that you were, in fact, on the highway.
Southard says community, business, and civic leaders initially created highways through their towns, connecting it to an automobile path. This spurred the creation of roadside motels, gas station stores, and other types of commerce. It lured big businesses, including Car Parts Company, to sponsor the town highway.
And towns would often compete to be included in these routes because it was a commerce booster. I mean, this was something that would bring people, and ostensibly people who were middle class or even more affluent, through their town.
Roadways like Main Street in Mesa and Van Buren in Phoenix were part of the Bankhead Highway. This old stretch, known today as Old 8th Street, is among the last original paths of the highway in Tempe.
Now, there are just a handful of signs that give it away. For instance, right here on the corner of Dorsey, we have a building that looks rather derelict at the moment. This was Marlett's Garage, a very early gas station built to serve motorists here driving the Bankhead Highway.
There's also an abandoned rail spur on the north side of the street. Southard says Old 8th Street is actually a path that was used many years before automobiles traveled through here. He says the trail connected Mesa and Tempe during the pioneer days. It's the show. I'm Nadine Arroyo Rodriguez.
You're listening to the show on KJZZ, and these are the sounds of the city around this time of year.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King.
Hi, my name is Deanna, and we are singing Christmas carols. We're singing at nursing homes. Give people this joy and excitement.
Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh.
It's fun to see their faces light up, and they end up singing with us too, you know, and it's just great.
That's Deanna Hassani singing Christmas carols with other members of All Saints Lutheran Church. If you have suggestions or hear things that make Phoenix Phoenix, send us a note. The show at KJZZ.org. Just ahead, we'll hear some of the best of our Tiny Desert concerts for 2015. Stay with us. It's the show.
And thanks for joining us here on KJZZ and KJZZ.org. For the show on this Thursday afternoon. Taking a look at Valley traffic, I-10, a crash in the median near 91st Avenue. The HOV lanes are blocked in both directions, and that's causing a lot of slowing through that area. Loop 101 westbound, an accident on the exit ramp at 23rd Avenue.
KJZZ is supported by Fenimore Craig, a full-service law firm collaborating on new business ventures and technology startups for 130 years. FenimoreCraig.com.
The KJZZ shop might be the perfect place to find your holiday gifts. You and your family and friends can show off how much you love KJZZ. T-shirts, tote bags, and mugs make great gifts and support your favorite shows. You can see them at shop.kjzz.org. 66 degrees in Phoenix at 2:30.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. Severe storms in the south have killed at least 10 people over the past 24 hours. High winds, in some cases tornadoes, in parts of Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas have destroyed homes, tossed cars, and toppled trees. Mississippi Emergency Management Agency spokesman Greg Flynn says search crews are looking for some people who are missing.
In some cases, houses leveled and they're just not there anymore. So they're going to make sure that everyone is found Hopefully they are safe someplace.
The line of storms is now moving east. Forecasters warn of ongoing flooding in parts of Alabama and Georgia. U.S. immigration officials are planning to deport hundreds of families from Central America who entered the U.S. illegally this year. NPR's Hansi Lo Wong reports deportations could begin as early as January.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement is planning to focus on adults and children who recently entered the U.S. illegally and have been ordered to leave by an immigration judge. Since October of 2013, more than 100,000 families have crossed the southwest border, separate from the recent surge of unaccompanied minors. Immigrant advocates say many are fleeing violence and persecution in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, and should be granted asylum in the U.S. The planned raids were first reported by The Washington Post, citing people familiar with the operation. In a statement to NPR, Department of Homeland Security officials did not deny the report. Hansi Lo Wong, NPR News.
Black Lives Matter demonstrators are marching along some major shopping streets in Chicago to protest the killings of black men by police. They're also calling on Mayor Rahm Emanuel to step down. They're protesting the year-long delay in bringing murder charges against a white police officer who shot and killed a black teenager, shown in a video walking away. This is NPR News.
It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein. The show regularly brings local bands into our studios for tiny desert concerts. The bands play a couple of songs for us and talk a bit about the music. Today we'll hear three of our favorites, starting with Tyler Broderick of the indie pop band Diners. My co-host Mark Brody spoke with Broderick, who's 22 and has already been writing songs for 10 years, which means for a long time he wasn't even old enough to get into a lot of local venues. So he says his aspirations were hyper-local in scope.
Like, my dream show is like playing like the Mesa Amphitheater, because I live down the street from it.
But. So what kinds of places do you tend to play now?
There is a venue called the Trunk Space in Phoenix that I play all the time. And then there's a venue called Funny World that I also play at. But yeah, I mean, just there's a lot of places in downtown Phoenix that are real cool DIY spots.
Okay, so what is a DIY type of thing? When you're talking about music, we're not talking about like craft necessarily, but like in music, what does DIY refer to?
Well, it stands for do it yourself. And what separates like a DIY space from a, I guess, just like a regular venue is just like kind of like a set of ethics. Just everything is about kind of helping each other and helping the community out in like a really positive way.
So is the ethic of the DIY community, I mean, is that different than other parts of the music scene?
I think so. I think there's this nasty vibe that I've felt from some bands that just their only goal is to get really famous. And like, it's not about putting on a fun show. It's about seeming really cool to them and seeing, I don't know. It's just not about having a good time and having fun.
So where do you find the balance then between being cool about things and putting on a good show, but also, I mean, I assume you want some kind of notoriety and you'd
definitely to
make some money doing this, right?
Yeah, it's funny. This year was kind of the first time that I was like thinking about, well, it'd be really nice to do this for a living. I mean, there are bands that I know personally that have done it. Like, they've just inched their way up in a way where really they just get to do more of what they love. It's not so much about being a huge band and making a ton of money. It's just being able to do more of what you love. And that's, I think it's possible. I think it's really hard. I think you just have to go in with that mindset. And as long as you agree with everything you're doing, then it'll probably work out.
Is that kind of what you're looking to do? Just sort of be able to do more of what you're already doing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I just, all I think about is music all the time.
So can you play something for us?
Yeah, absolutely. This song is called In My Hometown. It's a new one.
I thought about the house I lived in growing up in my hometown. I thought about the pool I swam in after school with my cousins. I gave a dollar, received my change, walking home from the corner store, sipping the rest of my day. I drove around the blocks, I wandered. Not much else was there to do. I came across a thought, I forgot. Maybe I was at fault. I gave a dollar, received my change. Walking home from the corner store, sipping the rest of my day. I gave a dollar, said keep the change. Walking home from the corner store, sipping the rest of my days. I thought about the house I lived in, growing up in my hometown.
That song was called In My Hometown, performed by Tyler Broderick. He's with the band Diners. In listening to your music, it sounds like there's just a lot of, I don't want to call them competing influences, but sort of, it's not like one type of music. It sounds like there's a lot of different things sort of percolating in there. Can you describe sort of how you create your sound, what from what sounds like a lot of different kinds of sounds?
I can try. Yeah, I think I like my favorite bands are the bands that my friends play in. And so definitely, like, after I write a song, my first thought is like, oh, geez, I can't wait to show Tristan this, or I can't wait to show my bandmates this, because all my bandmates play in other bands too. So, I don't know, we talk about just bands we like. I mean, I tend to listen to a lot of Beach Boys and a lot of different pop bands from the 60s and 70s. So, I don't know, I think probably that gets in there, but also just the influence of talking about music to friends, and I think is just a big influence too. So, I don't know if that answers the question or not, but I love the music my friends write.
So is that part of this DIY ethic that, like, you're happy for your friends when they come up with something as opposed to like, man, I wish that was mine?
Oh, yeah, totally. My friends' bands, I really do feel like they're the best bands, and I feel super lucky to be a part of it in some way, just to be at a show where they play a new song, and I go, oh, geez, that's their best song right now. So I don't know, it's great.
So what's next for you?
We're going to be releasing a 7-inch record, EP, and then we're also working on a full-length album that will be out very soon.
I've been talking with Tyler Broderick of the band Diners. He's going to take us out on a song called Hear the World.
Something more than what's beyond your door. Something more than ever seen before. I wanna take a trip and hear the songs every town has got to sing. I wanna hear the world, see what I could be.
You're listening to the show, and we're taking a few minutes to listen to some of the Tiny Desert concerts we recorded this year. The show brings you the best of the valley and the state, and this is one element of this little program. The next group is Phoenix punk band Manhands. It's fronted by Mark Berry and Jackie Cruz. I talked with Mark and Jackie about their music and the punk scene in the valley.
I think that we have a really cool punk scene here. A lot of stuff's going on. I think a lot of bands are doing older style music, which I like, a lot of like 60s type stuff, psychedelic and punk, and like meshing everything together and creating new sounds and styles. So I like that a lot. I think other cities have a lot more going on, but they're bigger, like Austin or San Francisco have like bigger music scenes. But I think what we have going on here is really cool. And we've made friends with a lot of the bands we play with too. So we're like a tight-knit music community.
What about the Phoenix scene as far as women are concerned? Is there a feeling that a female musician has more challenges in this area, but also with the kind of music you're playing?
I'm not necessarily sure with the kind of music. I mean, I noticed that a lot of women are maybe known for doing poppy kind of indie rock, and so maybe there's not as many women doing like aggressive punk. But I feel like there are more challenges for women. Sometimes we get treated differently playing shows, performing, you know, by sound people or promoters or things like that. But I feel like from the years I've been playing in bands in Phoenix for about 10 years, I've gotten to know a lot of the people in the community, so they just treat me as an equal. And all the guys that I play with and all the bands we play with, when I'm playing with them, I'm not treated any differently. And I think in the punk scene too, in other cities, everyone's very aware of that and how women have been mistreated in these kind of situations. So I think people are becoming more aware. I don't deal with it as much as I guess as I used to when I was younger, but I mean, it still happens and it's frustrating.
Well, so how important is something like VagFest to encourage other women and other female musicians to get involved and feel confident about what they're doing?
I hope it's an important thing to women. I reach out to a lot of the ladies when I hear their music. I want them to be involved because I like to create like camaraderie and have other women to share music experiences with and to make friends with. And it's a fun thing. And plus, I just like hanging out with girls and jamming and listening to music that women make because it's cool to me.
Okay, guys, so why don't you play a song for us? What's up first?
Absolutely. This song is called Looking for Omens.
Let's talk a little about the venues that the two of you play, because it's a wide variety. Do you have a preference based on whether it's a DIY or whether it's a place that, like a 21 and over club, where something like that, does it affect how you play? Does it affect how the audience reacts to you?
I'd say the more comfortable we are, definitely we get a better response because we perform a lot better. But to me, it doesn't really matter. I really care about like the ambiance and if it... Some places just don't feel comfortable.
I would say I like kind of more intimate, smaller spaces or like darker, divey type bars or clubs. If the stage is too big, it can be intimidating.
You go into a place and you don't feel like everyone's an ice queen, or like you feel warmth there and friendliness and maybe a little darker. We don't care for the well-lit places. I don't know. It's like some feeling in the air.
How much of it has to do with feeding off your fellow band members? Jackie, what about that?
I don't know. I think it depends, because maybe if I know that he's a little nervous and anxious, I can get a little more nervous and anxious. Or, you know, if we're not getting along before a show, that could actually make us have a really good performance.
Yeah.
Because when we're angry at each other on stage, I think that helps sometimes.
Probably our best shows have been when we were pissed.
We're both kind of neurotic.
Yeah, and natural performers,
yeah.
But we love it.
Yeah, we both still get really nervous, and I get sick before we play. Sometimes I have to run in the bathroom. Like, we both are just like, oh, and then we go up stage, and then we're fine. this is the truth.
It's interesting hearing how both of you feel about the actual being neurotic and still really, really wanting to do this. So I wonder, from a creative standpoint, is it important that thousands and thousands of people get your album, download it, hear it, whatnot? Or do you take satisfaction from the fact that as a band you've come together as a group that's really in sync?
I think you have to take pleasure in those small accomplishments, because I don't feel like the music industry is, it seems very hard.
No, especially for our style of music, we're not going to reach like hundreds and thousands of millions of people with this style of music. It'll never be mainstream, but it would be cool to be able to play like bigger venues and just like the mini goals that we have for ourselves in playing music.
I know when I look back on like the goals we set out when we first started this, we've done so many of them. It feels really good. This has been the most fulfilling experience of my life, being in this band.
All right, guys, take us out on one more song here.
Okay, this one is called New Life.
Jackie Cruz and Mark Berry are members of the Phoenix punk band Manhands. It's the show. I'm Steve Goldstein, and we've been listening to several of our favorite Tiny Desert concerts. The show finds unique stories and sounds from around the valley, and Tiny Desert concerts, when we bring in local bands to the KJZZ studios, is one of those elements. The Pistoleros have been a fixture of the valley music scene for over 20 years, and the band is probably best known for its role in Tempe's jangle pop scene of the 1990s. This year, the group is releasing its first album in 10 years, Shine. The Pistoleros are fronted by two brothers, Mark and Lawrence Zubia. While they're very close, both as brothers and collaborators, they were estranged for some time, while Lawrence was experiencing some severe substance abuse issues. And even though the pair put out music during that period, for many fans, this newest album represents a big transition, both symbolically and stylistically. We began by asking Mark how he defines artistic growth.
For me, it's defined by being able to capture that inspiration and then use the craft you learned to form that inspiration. And that's what I noticed that for both of us, that we're able to do that more succinctly now.
Well, do you know when you've nailed it better now than you used to, or no?
Sometimes, and other times, no. That's why it's kind of nice that Lawrence and I work together, because I rely on him for melodies and lyrics, and I think, speaking for you, Lawrence, I think he relies on me for maybe some musical guitar, you know, arrangements. So we edit each other.
Yeah.
And so, to answer your question, I don't always know exactly. So that's why it's good to have a writing partner.
I mean, was it a matter of complementing each other's strengths, or it just came to? I mean, as far as when you write lyrics together, are you actually writing together, or is that feeling what you guys just said about arrangement, lyrics? Where do they intersect?
Doing this record, there was a lot of clarity, and a lot of those questions were answered for me. We do have a method, and both Mark and I write separately, like bring in whole songs separately, and they're almost done, and then Mark does what he said, arranges them for me, and maybe I'll clean up Mark's lyrics. But then there's also the songs that are only barely started, and we both bring those in, and then those compliments come into play at full force. Mark will really show me where he thinks I was really kind of going with the idea, and I will kind of figure out the lyric and the melody. But it's really succinct, as Mark said. Now it's working really well now.
Mark, when you play live for an audience, how do you combine the fact that you're going to play the songs they know, you also want to make sure they understand the sound the direction is going in now? Are you able to enjoy that and not resent that?
Yeah, no, I enjoy it. I appreciate everything that's happened to us and don't shy away from it at all. But of course, want to introduce, you know, new songs that may not be what they're expecting or what we're expecting. So to open the channels a little bit wider is always welcomed.
If I might add to that, there's sort of a beauty in everything, you know? There's a beauty in the fact that we didn't have two really huge hits and that we can't come out from behind those hits, you know? Like, that's it, show's over, you know, because we played our hit. With the people that have followed us here in Tempe for the last 20 years, super loyal people, and it seems like we can play almost anything quality that we've written and get kind of the same reaction. Certain people have certain favorites, but there was no, like, a quintessential radio hit that we have to
live up to
or come out from behind.
Or emulate anything. over and over again.
Lo siento, yo no sé. I'm hoping we can slip away. Lo mismo otra vez. Lo mismo todo, yo no sé.
When you guys were able to get back together after that down period, from a musical standpoint, I get that you guys popped back together, but from a personal standpoint, did you like each other again? Did you really want to spend time together?
Yes, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I was ready. The time was right. The waters had calmed, and it was the right time to do it. But nobody could have told me a month in advance or 6 months in advance that it was going to happen. It was just seeing him and knowing that it was time.
Okay, last thing, and this might be the same answer for both of you, but Lawrence, how are you going to define success? Not necessarily of this album, but success of the rebonding of the brothers as you move forward.
Making a couple more records. Making a pretty straight-up country-western album. And then maybe a
folkish
Jayhawks meets the Zubia Brothers type of record.
And then another Pistoleros record.
Yep.
You know, just keep doing it. As far as success goes, I get to do what I love to do, so I feel successful.
Mark and Lawrence Zubia are two members of the Pistoleros, and the song you're listening to is I'm Concerned.
I'm concerned that I'm not concerned.
You can see video of all of these performances as well as other Tiny Desert Concerts by visiting kjazz.org/Tiny Desert Concert. And if you're in a band or know of one that you'd like to play a Tiny Desert Concert, send us a note, theshow@kjazz.org.
My heart and soul overflow.
This holiday, if your family has become a little too much or you just need a distraction, you may want to sneak away to catch a movie and unwind. If you need some suggestions, here are some of our staff favorites.
My movie is Home for the Holidays because Holly Hunter is hilarious in this movie and Robert Downey Jr. is delicious. And it's like just a whole bunch of 90s optimism and dysfunctional family weirdness that, I don't know, I kind of relate to.
Your plants are so beautiful, Aunt Gladys. How many do you have now?
210.
Want to see a really big boil?
No, thank you. Not today.
My favorite holiday movie is Love Actually because it always reminds me of the bittersweet nature of the holidays. And somehow, at the end, when all is said and done, it kind of makes me feel like there really is a lid for every pot.
But the truth is I'm in love. And I was before she died. There's nothing I can do about it.
I mean, I'm a little relieved.
Why?
But because I thought it would be something worse.
Worse than the total agony of being in love.
When all the Christmas music and the Christmas movies get to be too much, I like to watch The Outlaw Josie Wales because even though it's a Western and it's a Clint Eastwood movie, it's a surprisingly warm story about a loner who learns to live with other people, and it's really funny.
You have any food here?
All I have is a piece of hard rock candy. But it's not for eating. It's just for looking through.
That was Stina Sieg, Sarah Ventry, and Jimmy Jenkins. And for me, to sort of match my adventurous lifestyle, any James Bond movie will do.
Bond. James Bond.
Thanks for listening to the show on KJZZ. For Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. Happy holidays. This is member-supported KJZZ FM Phoenix and HD.